significant membership in Odessa. The last time the county had voted for a Democratic presidential candidate was in 1948, when it went for Harry Truman. If the politics was conservative, so obviously were the attitudes. In 1982, the mayor of Odessa proclaimed Decency Awareness Week and asked citizens to give appropriate recognition to this week by suitable observances and prayer and supplication to Almighty God to deliver our city, state, and nation from the threat of public decadence and crimes of indecency. In the early 80s, a group called Odessans for Decency had been formed. The group avowed a four-point platform, stamping out abortion, pornography, and homosexuality, and establishing prayer in the schools. For a time, it was quite popular and quite effective. It engineered a successful campaign to force an adult bookstore out of the downtown. It successfully lobbied the city council to block a cable company from offering a sexually explicit program called Escapade. It also led a spirited campaign to prevent Ozzy Osbourne from playing a concert in Odessa in 1983 because of the British rock star's outlandish behavior, which had included biting the head off a bat as well as performing songs that allegedly encouraged Satan worship. But a federal judge ruled that Osbourne had a contractual right to play here. Joe Say, one of the founders of Odessans for Decency, said the group had asked its followers, who he said numbered 12,000, to pray that God himself would prevent Ozzy Osbourne from coming to Odessa, Texas. Osbourne ended up canceling because he had the flu. In 1987, Say stepped down as president of Odessans for Decency to found a group called the Christian Voting Bloc, an organization aiming to promote political candidates with Christian values. During election time, he sent out a list of endorsements to a secret mailing list of 1,200 registered voters. Influential Democrats in town, much to their chagrin, believed the group had significant influence. The platform of the Christian Voting Bloc was much the same as that of Odessans for Decency, fighting pornography and working to curtail any special rights for homosexuals. In the latter part of 1988, when a state district judge from Dallas said he gave a murderer a lighter sentence because the two victims were homosexual, Say was one of the few to support him publicly. "We'd work to keep him in office," Say told members of the press. "We need more like him." When George Bush came to Midland, Odessa, he didn't go quite as far, but it was the family and school prayer and allegiance to the flag that he highlighted over and over. As historian Gary Wills pointed out, he seemed as closely linked to Pat Robertson as he did to Ronald Reagan, and it was a strategy that worked brilliantly. Dukakis forces in Texas had thought they could win the state on the basis of the economy. They thought that the issues of gun control and the Pledge of Allegiance were emotional fads that would quickly die out. They never thought that Bush's rhetoric, a kinder, gentler version of the Morton Downey show, would have much lasting effect. They patiently waited for the campaign to get back to the greater good of forging practical solutions to massive problems. But that shift never took place. Perhaps just once Dukakis should have left the rarefied atmosphere of Boston and Harvard that seemed to entrap him no matter where he was, hopped in a car by himself, and taken a drive down one of those lonely, flat-as-a-pancake roads to the gleaming lights of a Friday night football game. As in ancient Rome, any road he chose would have gotten him there. He could have pulled down his tie and unbuttoned his collar. He could have gone to the concession stand to eat a Frito pie and a chili dog, and then wash it all down with one of those dill pickles that came carefully wrapped in silver foil. Instead of keeping track of the score, he could have sat in a corner of the stands to listen to the conversations around him, as well as take note of the prayers both before the game and after. He could have seen what people were wearing, observed how they interacted with their children, listened to the songs the bands were playing, watched those balloons float into the air like doves of peace, and let the perfume of the Pepettes and the Golden Girls flow sweetly into his nostrils. He could have counted how many blacks were there, how many Hispanics. There was a heartbeat in those stands that dotted the Friday nights of Texas and Oklahoma and Ohio and Pennsylvania and Florida and all of America, like a galaxy of stars, a giant lurking heartbeat. Michael Dukakis never heard that sound, and even if he had, he probably would have dismissed it as some silly tribal rite practiced in the American boondocks by people who made no difference. But his opponent didn't make the same mistake. He had been down the lonely road to those games where the heartbeat had resonated more spectacularly than in the healthiest newborn. He knew it was still as strong as ever. He knew what kind of values these people had. In his acceptance speech for the Republican nomination for president, Bush reminded an entire nation and entire world of where he had been and what he believed in. His echo of the past, a reaffirmation of the present. Now, we moved to West Texas 40 years ago. 40 years ago this year. And the war was over, and we wanted to get out and make it on our own. Those were exciting days. We lived in a little shotgun house, one room for the three of us, worked in the oil business, and then started my own. And in time, we had six children, moved from the shotgun to a duplex apartment, to a house, and lived the dream. High school football on Friday nights.
This audiobook has been broken into multiple parts to make the download faster. You have reached the end of a part, but not the end of the complete audiobook. So please check your library for the next part of this audiobook.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.
This is Audible.
Recorded books and one-click digital present Friday Night Lights, A Town, A Team, and a Dream by H.G. Bissinger. Narrated by Tom Steckschulte. Chapter 10. Booby Who? Part 1. When Booby Miles returned to the football field, no one called out his name with those bellowing chants that had rocked the watermelon feed in a moment that seemed like a millennium before. There were no bursts of applause, no coach's speech comparing him to the great Permian runners of the past, no take your sweet time walk down the aisle of the crowded high school cafeteria. In the space of 5 weeks, he had become an afterthought, whose past performance earned no special privilege and seemed largely forgotten. Had there been a waiver wire in the world of high school football, a place to dump former stars, he would have been on it, dangled at a bargain basement price to Andrews or Kermit or Wink or maybe Seminole or any other town that might be willing to take a chance on a once-hot prospect with a bum knee for the stretch run to make the playoffs. Or maybe he could just be traded for a reserve defensive tackle and a player to be named later.
"In a week or two, the fans will think he already graduated," said Trapper. "They'll be saying, 'Booby who?'"
Booby who? The only thing to herald his return was the shame and ignominy of a white shirt. There were dozens of other players wearing them as well, and together they blended into the dry heat of the practice field like lingering cattle waiting to be herded in this or that direction. There were a select few who didn't look that way and clearly stood out, but Booby didn't merit that distinction anymore. As part of a long-standing tradition, the Permian starters wore black shirts during practice, and the subs wore white. In the life of a player, few single moments were more stirring than to open up the locker one day and find a black practice jersey hanging there like a gilded sacred robe in the middle of a foul-smelling pile of pads and pants and shoes and jocks. Conversely, few single moments were more humbling than to have that black shirt taken away and given to someone else. Booby had worn a black shirt his junior season,
Up until the knee injury, he had worn one his senior year without a remote thought of change. But in his absence, Chris Comer had come to own the black shirt at fullback. He had rushed for 100 yards or more in each of Permian's 5 games, and it was becoming the general consensus of the coaches that he was better than Booby ever had been or ever would be. For one thing, he worked harder in the weight room than Booby and didn't coast on his natural strength. For another, he didn't try all those pretty boy spin moves all day long like he was some damn ballerina or something, but knew that the best way sometimes to get by someone was to lower the shoulder and punish the living shit out of him. Use that stupendously strong body of his as the weapon God had clearly intended it to be. Booby might have been able to run like that, but it was difficult to get him to try it. In the past, all that was a necessary part of coaching him. But now, it didn't matter nearly so much. If he wanted to show off his fancy spins and jukes, he could do it at home in his backyard, in between the broken-down cars and the little pieces of trash that swirled in the wind. He wasn't a black shirt anymore. Just another white shirt trying to work his way back into the starting lineup. When he returned to practice and discovered his reduction in status, he was livid. It wasn't supposed to be this way. Not his senior year.
"They made me wear a white shirt," he said afterward. "They jacked me. If I don't play, I'm not going to suit up. You know me. If I suit up, I want to play."
On the field, the coaches were as gentle with him as ever, treating him once again as an explosive time bomb that could be set off by the slightest impulse. When Booby went up to Coach Ballou and asked him if he was going to play that Friday night against Midland High, Ballou gently told him that they had to make sure he was ready, make sure his knee could take the stress of a live football game. But off the field, in the coach's office after practice, Ballou couldn't believe the nerve of Booby to ask such a ridiculous question. "Did you hear what Booby said to me? He asked me if he was going to play Friday," Ballou told the other coaches. "It would be a miracle if he can play this year. It's a tough road to hoe coming back from knee surgery and playing in the same year. It would be suicide to let him play." It raised the question of why he was out there at all, since it had already been determined that Booby would need knee surgery after the season. For the team, his return appeared to be a no-risk proposition. If he came back, it was a gift, a pleasant surprise. If he didn't come back, that was okay, because they had found someone who had not only replaced him, but surpassed him. But for Booby, the risks were enormous. If he did play well, it might rekindle the interest of recruiters who had gone on to whore after other tricks. But by playing, there was always the risk of further damage to his knee, as well as the psychic damage of having to adjust to being a bit player in an extravaganza that had originally been written for him. Initially, there had been nothing but the blindness of hope, as if a magic wand would appear and make his knee pure again.
"I can't wait to come back," he had said shortly after the arthroscopic surgery that was done at the time of the injury. "Put on that knee brace and fly."
He felt certain he would regain his role as starting fullback by the Odessa High game, when the stadium would surely be rockin' and rollin'. But it was a belief only he held.
"He thinks he's going to be ready for OHS, but he's sadly mistaken," said Trapper. Initially, he had been surprised by the dedication with which Booby worked toward rehabilitation. But like most everyone else associated with the program, he had little real faith in him. When the reality of the injury set in, when it became apparent to Booby that there was no magic wand, the grueling regimen of rehabilitation became more frustrating and futile.
"That was out of his nature for him to do that too hard, out of character," said Trapper. "You have to be thinking that he's seen the handwriting on the wall. The team hasn't fallen apart without him."
When the Odessa High game took place, Booby was still in street clothes,
Watching the pregame warm-ups, he seemed devoid of any emotional connection to the team, his infectious self-confidence dissolving into detached coldness, an observer peering in on something that had no place for him.
"No, I'm not that excited," he said as the stadium began to fill up,
and during the game he said almost nothing, but looked on glumly as the team moved effortlessly ahead without him. He came back to practice the following week to the shame of a white practice jersey, and he had no role in Permian's 42-0 trouncing of Midland High. During the next week, when it became clear he was going to get a chance to play, his mood alternated. There were glimpses of the old booby holding court once again in the locker room, turning to Jared McDougal and addressing him with, "Hey, baby ostrich head face." There were also glimpses of his finding the game of football a difficult struggle. During one of the early morning practices in the gymnasium, he was pushed while running with the ball. After the play, he turned around and hurled the football at the offender. That Friday night against the Abilene High Eagles, he suited up with the familiar paraphernalia. The high-top Nikes, the silver stockings, the white Terminator X towel. He watched from the sidelines as Comer scored the first two touchdowns of the game, one on a 3-yard run and the other on an 88-yard run, where he broke up the middle on a trap and just outran everyone else to the goal line. Booby stood behind the other players, glassy-eyed, his hands clasped. He got into the game in the second quarter and gained 4 yards on his first carry of the season. He got the ball again, spinning for a gain of 2 yards. And then he blocked from the tailback position as Comer scored his third touchdown of the night to make the score 28-0 at the half. Comer had already gained 125 yards on 9 carries. Booby had gained 6 yards on 2 carries. He carried the ball 8 more times in the second half. It was obvious he was tentative, the knee looming as if all the bone and flesh and ligament and cartilage lay there exposed for everyone to take a shot at, like some carnival game. "I think he's scared, real scared," said Trapper from the sidelines as he watched Booby drag his leg a little bit and get up slowly from a pile of tacklers. But Trapper had to admire his gutsiness. "I think he's doing a lot better than I expected." With a 3rd and 2 at the Abilene 23, he took the ball on the handoff, and suddenly all the justifications flooded back of why he had once been touted as one of the 10 best running backs in the state of Texas. He cut up the middle and broke past several tacklers for an 8-yard gain and a 1st down. The old fire was there, and the indelible image of Booby towering over hapless tacklers. Watching him, your heart rose, and you began to believe that he could do it, get it all back again, have the type of season that he wanted so badly to have. But it was only a flash, a haunting glimmer of what could have been. Several plays later, he left the game limping with a cramp and didn't return. In the meantime, Permian scored an easy 49-0 win to improve its record to 5-1 and solidify its top 10 ranking in the statewide polls. A year before, against the same team, Booby had had the night of his life. He had gained 232 yards on 8 carries. He would have easily broken the Permian record for the most yards rushing in a single game if Gaines, deciding the game was a rout, had not taken him out. Gaines said he hadn't known that Booby was close to the record. But the performance was still spectacular enough to earn him a mention in USA Today. LV carefully kept the clipping, just as he carefully kept a pile of other glowing clippings about Booby, from the Dallas Morning News and the Odessa American his junior year. On this night against the Abilene Eagles, he gained 46 yards on 10 carries, and his return to action earned a single paragraph at the tail end of the Odessa American account of the game. There was no reason to give him more mention than that. Compared to Comer, who finished the game with 138 yards, he hadn't done anything. For LV,
Watching Booby play against Abilene had been harrowing. On every play,